And welcome back to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I am Ryan Burns, Gopher Illustrated's publisher, and there is no Luke Buehr today. Our beloved producer has taken the day off, and in his spot is actually, I guess, technically my boss. Not entirely sure how that all translates, but it is a very requested episode with the Midwest guru himself, Mr. Alan True. Alan, how are things for you today, and how are things in Michigan?
You know, I'm not teaching homeschool today, which is a regular occurrence this year, so I am happy to be here talking to you and not six first graders.
Well, let's get it out of the way first. How is your teaching license as a stay-at-home parent, I guess, quote-unquote? I guess that's in our job description. How is your teaching abilities for first graders now?
I think I'm pretty good. Listen, they're all testing very well in state testing.
In what does a first grade test even look like?
I don't know. All I know is they're all testing above grade level. So I'm just going to assume that it's something that I'm doing. They are doing great. I and the other parents in this little co-op we have in our neighborhood are not doing as well, but the kids are doing great.
So how many days a week do you actually teach homeschool between you and your wife?
One and a half. So we have Tuesdays entirely between the two of us. So if something breaks recruiting-wise on Tuesdays, I leave her stranded with them and go take care of that. And then Friday mornings, I have them by myself. That's a lot better than having to do it all for our son every single day, which was what we would be doing if we didn't have the neighborhood around us that has other first graders and kindergartners.
What is better, your ability to teach first graders or your disc golf game?
Oh, my disc golf game is way better than my teaching ability. Although there are times where both things frustrate me to the point where I've considered quitting both.
Have you ever gotten an ace in disc golf?
I have actually got my first this past October on my birthday, which is like the holy grail of disc golf, to get an ace on your birthday and your very first one.
This is, wow, I didn't know that about you. I didn't know that you were such an adequate disc golfer. So if you had to put, I guess, is there a handicap in disc golf? Yes? No?
That's a good question. I don't know. But I don't ball golf. I've never like real golfed hardly ever in my life. So I don't really necessarily know how all that works or like what the different levels of courses are. I do know that with disc golf, it like greatly varies from course to course how difficult it is. So I don't know if you get that same thing with regular golf. All I've done is smacked a few around at Top Golf with the rest of the 24/7 staff from time to time.
Well, it must be nice that the 24/7 staff's actually able to pay for some things for you, unlike some of us normal publishers. But last one before we actually get into recruiting talks, I know people are enthralled with us talking about first grade homeschool and in disc golf. If you had to put an over-under at how many strokes I would need to adequately handicap the two of us. Now, here's my disclaimer. My freshman year of college, there was quite the disc golf scene going on, and I played from time to time, but it's probably been, wow, it's been 10 years because I'm old now. So how many strokes would I need to adequately go against the pro that is you?
Okay, so I have some. I have a metric for this a little bit. I've only really disc golfed for 2 years. Before that, I had zero interest in it. Played Ultimate Frisbee, so I did come from throwing a disc. And the same course that's local here to me, the first time I played that course, I was 18 over. And this year, this last summer, I was -4 on that course. Is my best score that I've gotten there. So I've improved 22 strokes in 2 years. So I'm guessing you coming in as a new person with some background would probably score close to what I scored back then.
So 22.
We're talking in the neighborhood of like 20 strokes.
Interesting. Well, if you ever make it out here to Minnesota again for a camp, if those things ever exist, I might have to have you bring your, are they called discs or are they called frisbees or what do we call them?
Discs. Frisbees is pretty, I think is like it's like a naughty word in the disc golf community. So
is it degrading?
I don't know what it is. It just doesn't seem to be accepted. So we'll do that, and then maybe I'll come into your realm for something. We can do like an archery contest or something like that.
All right, beautiful. So for those of you who don't know, This is going to be the recruiting episode that is going to be free for all of you freeloaders here on the podcast. If you want to get the more in-depth one where there's some actual stories about Minnesota's 2021 recruiting class, I'm still trying to put the final touches on how I record something and then put it behind a password paywall so the freeloaders just can't do what they love to do. So this is going to have to suffice, and we'll have to see how this one goes with Alan here. So the first thing I would note, Alan, is you have a very unique story about how, I mean, let's be honest here, Alan. Not many guys in the recruiting industry look like yourself, talk like yourself, and have the knowledge that you do. But your start is something that I think a lot of people don't know about. And I know that it caught me off guard when I first asked you about it. So can you get into the story of how Alan True began down the football path?
Yeah. So I guess it starts way back when I was younger, even in like grade school. My parents say that I would fall asleep and be rattling off stats in my sleep. I was like obsessive with football, but on the other, like on the analytic side of it, I used to set our VHS recorder to tape. I think it was called Edge NFL Matchup. Ron Jaworski would actually break down plays, and I would my first grader sits and watches whatever show he's watching, or Ben 10 or whatever it is he's watching right now. I would sit there and watch Edge NFL Matchup. So I was writing mock drafts in crayon. We have one of them still. And so then we get into middle school, and there was a project. This is in the fairly early days of the internet, dating myself a little bit. Everybody had to build it. All the kids had to learn how to build a website. It was like the first that we kind of started to learn HTML, and we were building it in, I want whatever Netscape Navigator's website building component was. I can't remember what it was called. Composer, maybe. So we all had to learn that. And so it's like start a business, build a website for it. People were doing pizza shops and this kind of thing. I decide I'm going to do a scouting service. I really just was trying. It wasn't a legit business at the time. I just really didn't want to create some other business. So I did a scouting service thing, and I would write scouting reports and I put them on there. I did mock drafts.
And you're like 13 years old at this point.
13 years old. It's on a GeoCities website. I was still tape recording college games. I remember going away. My parents would go away during bowl season for the holidays, and I would set our VCR to record the bowl games. I'd watch them, write reports on them. And it started to get some traction, started to get noticed. I never put my age on there. And then it was a couple of years after that that I decided, you know what, shot in the dark. Why don't I just apply for a credential of the NFL Combine? The worst they're going to say is no.
Shooter's going to shoot, just like you always tell me.
And they said yes, which at that point, many fewer people were trying to get credentialed for the Combine. I think today, if that happened, if some kid with a blog tried to get into the Combine today, they probably wouldn't. Back then, there was less media covering the Combine. So they credentialed me, and I went down. Couldn't drive yet. My mother took me down to Indianapolis. And I covered the Combine.
So when you walked in and people are like, there's a 15-year-old, Asian kid here. And what was the kind of reception, I guess, and how did people actually receive you into the NFL world?
So I'll always remember this part of it, because there was a guy named Steve Alec, who I'll remember for the rest of my life, who was doing the credentialing, and I checked in. And I think it dawned on him. He was like, how old are you? You know? So I told him, and he said something like, well, you know, we credentialed you. We looked at your site. So just like he said something like, don't make us look dumb, and don't make yourself look dumb. So, I mean, I sat there and diligently worked in that media room. I remember sitting next to John Clayton, and there was kind of a moment of like, what am I doing here a little bit? And I'm a huge Steelers fan, right? So I remember Bill Cowher walked in to do his press conference there in the room. And I, like, every instinct of mine was to lose it. And I was like, I'm not only going to not lose it, I'm going to ask this guy, I'm going to muster up the courage to ask him a question. So I asked him a question, and he actually said, hey, that's a pretty good question. And he answered the question. And then afterwards, you know, some people, other media people, pulled me aside, and they're like, hey, good question. Way to way to sack up and ask Bill Cowher or something. And that was kind of the moment where I was like, okay, I think people realize that I'm not just here to like get autographs or whatever it was that they may have thought I was doing.
So from 16-year-old or 15 at the NFL Combine, like what was the next progression from you? Because you obviously went through high school, college, and then how did you actually get started here in the recruiting game?
Yeah, so I was playing high school football at the time, and my school played against a couple guys who were getting recruited, and so just for the heck of it, I would write something about those guys, or I wrote something about my own teammates who were trying to get recruited, just as, you know, silly, let's throw your name out there on the internet and see what happens, right? I was also making the highlight tapes for some of my buddies. I was the one that knew how to hook a VCR into another VCR and make a highlight tape. So we were always at my house doing that. I remember doing that for me. This is how funny it was, too. Back then, the tape was so grainy that we had two receivers on our team, an 88 and an 89. And depending on the play, sometimes you couldn't see the jersey number. So we would put the other's plays on the other's highlight tape sometimes to make the tapes longer.
Look at you.
Yeah, remember doing that. And then I got – so then from there, I started getting into, like, recruiting. So I was reading – Scout was called the Insiders back then, and there was Rivals. I couldn't get a subscription, but I actually had found a way to like hack into their directory and download their highlight videos.
So, what?
Yeah, I found a way to get into their like back end video directory because they were all stored in the same place back then, and would download all of these highlight tapes and watch them. So that's what I was doing at that point. So I wrote a few draft reports on Michigan guys, and it was actually Sam Webb who found me and said, hey, we like what you're doing. You're like, pretty accurate on these Michigan reports. Will you come on and write some stuff for us? And that's then, you know, slowly, I think Michigan was recruiting some guys in West Michigan. They didn't have a person there to say, well, you want to go to this high school game? And I did that. I started to get more into that side of it. So then Sam had sent me down to Cincinnati to cover this crosstown showdown. By this point, this is freshman year of college. I schedule my class load entirely Monday through Thursday. So on Fridays I can leave and go to a game. So this is like freshman year of college. I leave on a Friday night. I take my buddy with me just so he can hold a camera. My roommate's with me, and we drive to Cincinnati to cover Ryan Mallett, who had come up from Texas to play some team in Cincinnati. So I'm setting up these multi-camera shots, and Bob Lichtenfels, who was in charge of the Midwest and the East at that point for Scout, they had him running two regions. So he was looking for help. He was kind of like, what are you doing here? Who do you work? He's like, oh, you work for us? And he introduced me to Scott Kennedy, who at the time was overseeing all of the scouting at Scout, and I made it known to them that, like, hey, I'm helping out the Michigan site, but I'd really rather do this nationally or do this in the region or something where I'm not tied to a team. And they said, cool. So from there, they had introduced me to the right people. And I think it was that January I found myself down in San Antonio helping those guys out with Army Bowl.
So it's been how many years now that it's 2021? Because I think this will be my 10th year in the recruiting game, because I got into it my freshman year of college, which dating me is 2011. So how many years have you now been in this game, I guess, technically with an actual recruiting quote unquote service?
So the first thing that I ever wrote, I think, for Sam and those guys was I watched the Rose Bowl where Michigan played Vince Young and wrote about how the draft prospects played in that game. So that was 05, 06 probably. That bowl game was played.
Yep.
So and both. Then Mallett, I want to say, was the 07 or 08 Army Bowl.
And when did you get elevated to the Midwest guy?
So at the time, like I said, the Midwest guy, I don't remember what the story was. Whoever the Midwest guy was left or didn't make it, and so they just gave Bob the Midwest. He was really an East Coast guy. And so he was running two regions at the same time. And at the time, he was like, man, this is a lot for me. So even at that moment, when I first met him and I heard that, I was like, I want that job. Like, that's what I want to be. Because there weren't really, like, a lot of jobs in recruiting at that point. The idea that I would ever make this into something full time was fairly unlikely unless I got that role. So I worked under Bob in the Midwest for a while. And then eventually... I met Joel Cox, who was overseeing everything. And he said, but, you know, you're on a good path for this. We've never made a guy as young as you a regional guy, but, you know, just kind of keep on this path. So it must have been 2009 or so that I really kind of, so what they did was they gave me a 1 year interim under Bob as kind of, Bob's going to oversee you, but you're going to largely handle that. And then we'll see how you do from there.
I didn't realize. Okay. Interesting. And you know, another thing that I don't think a lot of people know is, I mean, you talk about the scout days. I mean, I guess I've been lucky enough, quote unquote, to work for all three of the recruiting services outside of ESPN with, I started at Rivals and then Joel brought me over to the scout at the time. And then as you and I both know, we were then acquired by CBS Sports and 24/7. And it's been, so you were with Scout 7 years, or when did we get acquired again? I don't even remember at this point.
And it's been longer ago than that we got acquired than we think. I always think that, like, oh, we just merged, but it's been like 3 years or so now.
Okay.
Maybe more. I don't know. So it was, yeah, it was a while with Scout. It was, it would have been 10 to 12 years.
Oof. Yeah. Jeez. So, I mean, between the two of us, well, you more importantly, because you're the elder statesman of this conversation, you know, you've got 15, 17 years in the game. And I know one of the questions that I had asked most frequently from our people at GI was, what is the evaluation over the years here? And you can just do in general, and then I guess we can get specific to a Minnesota player, is the one that you feel you best nailed, you know, compared to the rest of our competition out there. What is the one over the years you look back on and you're like, I'm so glad we had him higher than consensus? And so I guess let's start with a national guy that you feel really good about, especially now looking back on it with hindsight being 2020.
Yeah, I think there's two there that kind of stand out for me, but one of the earliest ones was Devontae Parker. I drove all the way down to Louisville, met the kid, saw him in a practice, got picked up the film from them. And at the time, you know, what didn't have a lot of interest was, you know, and Louisville had started to recruit him, but I think everyone kind of backed off because they knew that's where he was going. So he committed to Louisville, and I remember emailing our crew and being like, this guy is undoubtedly a four-star. Like, not only is he a four-star, he's probably a mid four-star. This guy's really good. And when he got drafted in the first round, I think Scout was the only site that had him as a four. And that was the one that was probably the first one that I can remember really like feeling like I went out on a limb on. Cause before that, being as young as I was and as inexperienced as I was, I wasn't regularly going out there and telling our guys like, hey, you're all wrong and the whole industry's wrong. Like, I think this, I was pretty reserved back then. That was the first one that I really feel like I stuck my neck out on. And the same thing happened with Darren Lee. Even though this was even before he got offered by Ohio State, he was really looking at like Georgia Tech and some like other kind of mid power five schools. And I convinced us to move him up to a four. He ends up, you know, going to Ohio State, and it was a first round pick. And I think we were the only four on him as well. So those are probably the two earliest where we had a four star grade on a guy that the rest of the industry had a three that turned out to be first round picks.
How about Minnesota guys specifically? Because I know going back over the years here, I mean, we've had, you know, you and I have had a multitude of conversations about Minnesota prospects and kind of the thought process behind, you know, either, you know, necessarily we want to be the highest or the lowest on them. You kind of more times than not don't want to be the guy in between. So when you look back on it, you know, again, there's a ton of recruiting classes from the Kill era to the Clays to now PJ Fleck. I mean, I'm sure the ones most recently here in your memory probably stick out, but which one are you most proud of in terms of a Gopher recruit here?
You know what? This might be that because it's newer, but Cody Lindenberg last year is one that I'm particularly proud of because we had identified it that way at a St. Louis opening regional that Steve Wilfong and I ran. We kind of both looked at each other and went, who's this guy? You know, kid comes down from Minnesota, doesn't have, I don't think, any offers at the time.
Nope.
There's a, you know, if you've ever been to one of these opening regionals, it's just a sea of bodies.
Yeah,
and we just both picked out this guy that no one knew running through drills. I was like, this guy's good. So we decided to make him, I think, like a low three after that, and not too, you know, you fast forward to when Minnesota offers, and we were like, wow, I almost kind of forgot it was the same kid until I went back and looked at it. And I said, Steve, hey, our guy just got offered, you know, and that one I'm probably proud of, because again, nobody was, that was just like, saw it, picked him out of a crowd. We probably should have had him higher now looking at what he did this year, but just because of the genesis of that one, I kind of feel the same way about Carter Coughlin. You know, he had sent us his tape, and I'd started talking to him. I want to say, was it Pitt that was his first offer? Somebody had offered him like that pretty early. And I immediately went, this guy's a four-star. There's no question in my mind this guy's a four. So we had him as a four very, very early. And so that one, you know, turned out to be, the accuracy of that one's whatever. But I think just because it was like an immediate, like, I know this guy's going to be a big-time player.
So now on the flip side of that, there's also the other side of the coin where I'm sure there's ones where you look back at yourself and you're kicking yourself for, we had him way too low. You know, you probably thought about it at the time. And now as that recruit has gone through his collegiate career, he's probably been drafted somewhere. So when you think about it nationally, what guys stand out to you as the ones that haunt you to this day where you're still thinking, boy, I wish I would have had the cojones to just be like, this is what I think. I think he should be higher. Or what kind of stands out to you?
Yeah, so one is Kirk Cousins. He's from Holland, Michigan, which is the town I grew up in. Their high school played against my high school. Was at
interesting
two or three of his games, but it was so early in my career. Like I said, I would see things and I go, I think this guy's good. I didn't really like run it up the chain all the time, or I just didn't. I would say, hey, can you look at this? I think this guy's pretty good, but I never would really push it or pursue it and say, hey, did you watch him? I think we should raise this guy up. So his is a little bit frustrating because I think I knew he was good, but also I kind of give myself a pass just for youth. The one recently that really bugs me is Corey Davis. His quarterback was committed to Illinois, and we were scouting the quarterback, and I was like, whoever this receiver is the best player on the field. So he was a two-star everywhere else. We made him a three, but a pretty low three. And in my mind, I was going, well, we're going to be higher than everyone, so this is okay. We're just going to bump this guy, no one knows, to a three, and we'll just leave it there. But in my mind, I was going, this guy probably should be way higher. And I didn't have the stones to kind of go out on a limb on that one. So that Corey Davis recently is the one that I felt like I should have done better on.
All right, so another question I guess I'd have for you, especially on the record here, is – how much input do you actually listen to from us site publishers? So like myself, like the Iowa guys, like Jeremy Warner from Illinois, Evan Flood from Wisconsin, because as you stated, I mean, you live in Michigan, you can't be everywhere on every Friday night to see these kids, where Evan, myself, Jeremy, David, and those guys, we can get out and see a little bit more. So as you've continued to kind of build relationships with us and figure out what our scouting takes are, how much input actually matters to you, Mr. Alan True?
Yeah, so I like to listen to, like, I like to gather all the information that I can get. So I definitely listen to everybody. Now, how much actual, you know, weight that carries, I think varies from situation to situation. There are some people on our network, surprise, surprise, who would try to bump up every single kid committed to their school. So we know who those people are.
One of those people? I need this on the record right now.
You are not.
Wow.
You do go to bat for your Minnesota guys and you're passionate about it. But I've also heard you say, I think you guys are right on with this, or whatever. I think you're pretty honest about it. So, and you do your homework, right? That's the part of this that I think when somebody gives us feedback, are you just, what do you have behind that feedback? Usually with you, you're like, I was at Minnesota's camp. I watched them do this board drill, you know, especially with them doing padded camps up there.
Right.
I mean, I remember you telling me about Kamal Martin on the board drill. That's valuable information that you have and that you've seen with your own eyes that we don't have. So if it's just a publisher who says, hey, can you watch this huddle? I watched the huddle that you guys have already watched, and I have a different opinion than you. You know, we'll take a look again because we want to make sure that we have it right. But it's especially taken into account when you guys have seen something or know something or have observed something that we have not. Then we're more likely to take that information. At least, I guess I'm speaking for me personally. I'm more likely to take that information into account than if it's just, you know, this guy's going to the school I cover.
Wow. I think that's about the nicest thing somebody said about me on this podcast is I'm not an actual maroon and gold Kool-Aid drinker more times than not. Now,
I mean,
I certainly have my moments as many people in this industry do, but it's interesting to kind of hear your perspective on that. And I guess another question I have for you would be, you've already kind of given the story about, you drove to freaking Cincinnati to see Ryan Mallett, and then you had to take your own video or you hacked into a database to download highlight videos. So as you kind of look at where things were at in 2007 compared to where we're at now in 21, how has it evolved in terms of for you? Because everybody wants to get stars and everybody wants to get noticed. So how much easier is it for people to get noticed now in 2020, 2021 than even a decade ago, where I even remember when I graduated high school in 2011, like my highlight tape was on a DVD. I had to go in and cut up everything myself to do that. And now with Huddle, it's so significantly easier for everything, in my opinion, to kind of get out there. But how have you seen it evolve over your time?
Yeah. So, I mean, the availability of information and film and footage and all that, it's not even close, right? Like we were lucky. I remember we would be trying to evaluate guys. And when I would get, and certain kids wouldn't just, it was difficult to get a kid or a coach at a school to put a DVD in the mail and send them to us. Recruiting sites also weren't as respected back then. So I'll call and say, hey, I'm from scout.com. Can you mail? And I'm in a dorm room at Grand Valley State, by the way. The mail person used to just be like, there's another box load of DVDs here for you. And I have no idea what you're doing. To get them to say like, hey, drop this DVD in the mail to me so that I can evaluate you and give you some stars. Most people would chuckle at that. And I remember there'd be guys where we would go through a whole cycle. And really, by the time I got the DVD, it felt like I had just, struck gold to even be able to see some clips of a kid. Now, obviously, you don't have that anymore. Not only do we have highlight tapes, we have video of these kids doing everything, workouts, private workouts. We have video of them playing other sports. We have camp video. We have 7-on-7 video. The amount of information and how quickly we can get that information is not even like it's night and day. People knock us all the time, for instance, for JJ Watt's rating and ranking. Talk about how he's a 2-star. I don't know that anybody on our network ever saw JJ Watt live. We definitely didn't see him live. I don't know if anybody ever saw a lick of film on him either. Now, you really have no excuse because we can see everybody. At the same time, now I feel like we know so much about everybody that you can convince yourself to like everyone that you watch. Like all these kids are going to, even if you play Division III football, your highlight tape is going to be pretty decent, right? Like you can't have a bad highlight tape and go play anywhere in college. So as you watch these tapes, there's so much available now that you start to have to really force yourself to make separations. And so even though I would say in general, things are much easier, that's the hardest part of it too, is deciding where to draw these lines.
And I think another question I get most frequently would be, again, since you're the guy who ultimately decides star rankings, a 3-star versus a 4 versus a 5, I think the number one question I usually get is, what's the difference? And now you've seen and gone through countless cycles here, and you've seen what a 4-star looks like versus a 3 versus a 5, but I think it'd be great for you to disseminate that information to listeners in terms of how does 24/7 Sports, and I guess more succinctly Alan True, disseminate what is a 3 versus a 4 versus a 5, and what are the differences kind of between those categories?
So the unfortunate thing for us is that it's not a very gradual drop off, right? Like, so from a 5-star to a 4-star, each star, that's a 20% reduction. Like, and sometimes it's one spot different. So the 350th guy in the country is a 4-star, 351st guy in the country could be a 3-star. And I can't always say that there's that big of a gap between each one. So I always tell people to kind of view it like the draft, the 33rd player taken in the draft as a second round pick and the 32nd guy is a first round pick. And so you think differently about a first round pick than a second round pick, but really those guys are in one spot different. The same thing with, Mr. Irrelevant versus whoever the next guy drafted would have been. One can say he got drafted in the NFL. The other's a free agent. It's a little bit like that when you now 24/7 is great because we have a secondary rating system. So you can at least see, well, this guy was a 90, this guy was an 89. And so I always encourage people to look at the varying degrees within the three. Because an 80, a three-star that's an 80 is a lot different in our mind than an 89 is a three-star.
You're getting ahead of yourself, because that's literally my next question is, what's the difference between an 80 and an 89? But let's keep on, keep on three versus four versus five for now.
Okay, so basically we view it as 24/7 uses the NFL draft as our metric. And people do kind of question that system, but it's the most black and white thing that we have. If you're a good college player with the potential to play in the NFL does all kinds of intense scouting, watching their college film. That process is going to tell you what they saw on their college tape. So even though it's based on the NFL draft, the NFL draft is based on how they did in college. So that's why, you know, we can black and white say this guy was drafted at this position. It matches up with where we had him ranked here, rather than just saying like an All-American, which is voted on, or an All-Big Ten performer who could just be, you know, a guy who had a great statistical year that isn't necessarily like a great prospect. There's all kinds of gray area with those sorts of determinations. So that's why the NFL draft is pretty black and white. Numerically, this guy got picked 13th overall. So our five stars are 32. So we basically view them as first round picks. And then the four stars we view as in the draftable range. So those are your guys that are going to be taken in the second through seventh round, maybe with some priority free agents in there.
Based off their physical characteristics more times than not, correct?
It's essentially, yeah. And then three stars are, you know, top end of the three stars, good players who probably won't get drafted. We consider anybody that's below that, like a three-star to us is somebody who should be playing at a power five school. So even if a guy commits to a MAC school, signs with the MAC, but is an 85 or something, we view that three-star determination as, well, some of these schools missed on this guy. He should be playing at a better place. Then two stars would be like generally, you know, G5s that we didn't think could play above that level, down to like good FCS to D2 prospects.
So I guess that leads me into that next question is, I mean, there's when you look at our star rating system, or the way that we assign numerical categories, you know, the five stars are, what are they, 98s and 99s or somewhere in that range. And then you have from 90 to 97 in terms of grades for the four stars. But then for the threes, it's a bigger category between an 80 in an 89. Now, obviously, there's a big difference between someone who's rated an 80 versus an 89 in the minds of people like Alan True. So to you, what is the biggest difference between an 80 and an 89? Because they're both three stars, but they're very much on different ends of the spectrum.
Yeah, I mean, I think just closer to being a four star, so closer to being a draftable guy. I think an 89 is a guy who maybe is just missing one or two characteristics. 80s to 84, probably guys who we view as, a lot of the times those guys fall into the category of good high school player that maybe doesn't have the upside to where we sneak him into the low fours or the high threes, or a guy who has a lot of upside but is so far behind developmentally that it's a risk. So there's some different types of guys who fall into that range. But I think generally speaking, 80 to 84 to 85 are also guys who, you know, you see a lot of G5 commits in there, even some FCS commits who we thought, well, traditionally these guys might be two stars. We think they're better than that. We think they probably should be playing at a school better than what they're committed to. And so we have some NDSU commits and those guys in the middle 80s.
Now, before we get into some of my favorite recruiting myths that I would love you to expand on, Alan, do you know what is the company that we work for? Do you know what it's called?
24/7 Sports.
And do you know if you want to support myself and yourself, or if you love what you're hearing from Mr. Alan True, and knowing that he is surfing our board daily and you can interact with him at any point, do you know how much it is for 30 days to sign up to Gopher Illustrated off the top of your head?
Are we running a promotion or something right now? Because it's different.
Well,
when there's promos,
there are no, well, it's just the everyday promo right now. Do you know for 30 days, it's 100 pennies, 10 dimes, 20 nickels, or $1 to get behind the paywall to talk to Alan True every single day.
I did not know that, but you rattled that off really quickly, and we're in a counting money unit with the first graders right now. So maybe I need to get you to zoom in to one of our first grade sessions, and you can teach them how many nickels it takes to get a subscription to Gopher Illustrated.
So if you want to interact with myself, interact with Alan True on a potentially daily basis, depending on how his teaching abilities and disc golf game is going, I encourage you to head on over to gopherillustrated.com. Like I said, it's 30 for 30 days. It's only a dollar. I believe it's 30% off an annual at any given point in time. So if you just want to bite the bullet and support us, that would be greatly appreciated. But Alan, I know this is going to be one of your favorite talking points of this podcast is there's a lot of misconceptions, I think, out there about the recruiting industry. And I think one of the ones that I'd love for you to address first is this, that quote unquote, schools with bigger 24/7 subscriptions have their commits get ranking bumps more frequently than lesser subscription bases. True or false?
So yes, that's one that people love to talk about. And there's just no evidence that suggests that. First of all, the rankings do not require a subscription to view. Anybody without a subscription right now can go on there and see who the number one team in the country is via the recruiting rankings, and can see what the star rating of any prospect in the country really is. So there's no reason really to bump a guy just because of where, you know, just for subscriptions, because it doesn't really drive subscriptions. And if you look at, you know, our top sites, the biggest site on our network is North Carolina. I kind of rack my brain a little bit. They're doing pretty well in this year's class, but they've been the biggest site on the network for a long time. And prior to Mac Brown's arrival, you know, they were 30th the year before he came in the recruiting rankings. They've been in the 40s some years. So it's not like we're doing them any favors because they have a good site with us. At the same time, there are sites, you know, in our top 25 that are fast growing. Like our Illinois site is great. Jeremy Werner does an awesome site over there. You know, the last couple of years they've been towards the bottom of our Big Ten rankings. Right. So, you know, I haven't been tempted, nor has the company said, Alan, we have a great site over there. Jeremy's, you know, bringing in revenue. Please rank their guys higher. Like that never happens. I'm in a rankings call every week with our guys. We take great pride in it. It is more exciting for me to be able to turn around and say I got Devontae Parker right than it is for me to say, you know, I helped Ryan Burns make 100 nickels or whatever it is because of my rankings. We all just, you know, we spend too much time on the road and too much time viewing these players to just slap some ratings on them because, you know, we happen to have a good site in the market that they're committed to. And oh, by the way, these kids change commitments all the time now that it doesn't really, like, even if we were going to do that, which we aren't, it doesn't really make sense to do that because these kids change their commitments at the drop of a hat.
So you mean to tell me that because the Minnesota site has grown in recent years, that people shouldn't just think just because that happened, you know, Minnesota just signed, I think they have a top 25 class still, and we're 3 weeks from the second signing day, that they shouldn't just immediately think, wow, Ryan's got such a big subscriber base that 24/7 is trying to throw him a bone. So you're trying to tell me, Alan, that maybe Minnesota actually did sign a pretty dang good recruiting class by their standards.
I mean, you also can't fudge stuff like that, right? Like, people who follow recruiting know that Minnesota recruiting is getting better. You can look at who PJ Fleck has recruited and who they've gotten and the teams that they've beaten and then seeing the results from guys like Rashad Bateman, et cetera, to know that we didn't just bump Rashad into the four-star range because he was committed to a site that was growing. So I mean, you can only fake stuff like that for so long. And so I think the proof is in the pudding on some of that.
Well, speaking of, that leads me into my next myth, is that a star ranking is based off offers or where they commit. True or false?
So that's obviously false. Absolutely not. Plus, we rank guys so early now. Like, we already have the 2023 class. And a lot of these guys are ranked generally before they commit places. It's not 100% across the board, but we try to be ahead of that. Offers probably play into it a little bit. Like, certainly if we have a guy who's ranked a little bit lower and he starts to pick up a bunch of offers, we need to turn around and say, like, did we miss something here? or are these schools missing something? But it's not a direct correlation to like Alabama offered this guy, we better bump him way up, because we also understand that nowadays a lot of schools throw out a lot of offers. And so we know that, you know, even within the some schools offer 30 guys at a position, there's a pecking order within that position. Doesn't mean that we need to rank all of those guys or rate all of those guys as four stars. So with the amount of offers thrown out, with the amount of non-committable offers thrown out there, it would be foolish for us to really try to take that too heavily into account.
Now, we're going to get a little bit sidetracked here because I want to explore that because you mentioned it. I mean, you and I have seen it, I think, grow more and more each year, and it's kind of sad for the recruit perspective, but the quote, committable versus non-committable offer is something that I think, I mean, when I first got into this, I had no idea. You know, I just thought, like, oh, they extended an offer, it's committable. And I don't even know at this point, I mean, what percentage of offers do you think when they're first extended, and I know this is a complete generality, when these schools are extending an offer, and now I think there's differentiations in terms of what time of the year it is, but what percentage of offers do you think when they're first extending, when they have that phone call or before COVID, that face-to-face meeting, are actually committable on the spot when they are first extended?
And I would say somewhere around 50%.
Yeah.
Especially when these guys get offered sort of like 23s and 22s. I don't think schools are ready. Like, schools are offering 23s. I don't know that a lot of them are ready to start taking a bunch of guys in the 2023 class. So it's the earliness of that, you know, kind of. And I think, like you said, if you follow recruiting enough, you can tell by, you know, which school it is, the time of year that it is, the player that it is. You can tell a little bit of what that is. But I do think that there's also a little bit of a myth that schools who are putting out 300 offers are then turning down a bunch of kids. I think in those cases, those schools mostly are offering guys they know they probably won't get. So, you know, if you're Iowa State, for instance, who gets ragged on a lot by throwing out a lot of offers, you know, they do offer guys towards the top of the national board who really won't ever look at Iowa State. So some of those offers are for that purpose and kind of maybe getting in at a school or just taking a shot on a guy. So the true like non-committable offers, you know, I've heard of not too many where a kid tries to commit to a school and they just say absolutely not.
All right. So let's get back on the train of myth or not a myth. After a kid commits to a school, they don't move up because then they can't be used to sell subscriptions. True or false?
People do think that we try to keep uncommitted guys towards the top of the board so that it entices people to read the articles about those guys. But that's, I mean, I think if you look at the top of our rankings, it's just not true. Like the top guy in the Midwest for the last in the 21 class is Jack Sawyer. And he's been in that spot for like 2 years, maybe more. And he was the first commit in the Ohio State class. He's been committed for an extremely long time. So if we wanted to drop Jack Sawyer because he wasn't, you know, selling subscriptions, that would have happened a really long time ago. I think it just kind of coincides, just happens that way, that if you're a guy who's way up there, if you're Corey Foreman or JT Tumalolau, those guys have the ability to wait longer to commit because schools are going to keep spots open for them. So that's where people get tricked sometimes into thinking that the guys at the top of the board are there because they're uncommitted. I think it's the opposite. They're uncommitted because they're at the top of the board.
All right, I think the last one I have for you is myth or not a myth. A few good non-padded camp reps can move a star ranking way up. True or false?
Yeah, so that is sort of a half truth because we do take those things into account, right? And it happens at every level of scouting. College coaches are offering, you know, want kids to come to camp so they can view them in an unpadded camp shorts and t-shirt setting. NFL teams are watching guys at pro days. They are all there at the NFL combine watching guys in shorts. So if at that level they can take those things into account, well, then so can we. I think the myth is that that's all that we're looking at. A lot of the time that stuff has to supplement what we're seeing on film. If a kid blows up at a 7-on-7 and we go back and we watch the high school film, we're like, well, there's a huge difference there. Usually we want to sit and wait and see that guy play more on the field and say, well, maybe he improved a lot. That's why he was so good in 7-on-7, or maybe he's just a 7-on-7 player. But if we go back and we see, okay, the film does match this. We missed something that 7-on-7 showed us, or we missed something that this camp showed us, then the kid will move up. So then people will think, oh, well, just because you guys just saw him at the 7-on-7, you bumped him way up. But really, we had probably already been researching that kid and already had seen the film, already had other information on them, and we got some things verified. That's the other thing that, that these camps can do, especially when we have the opening regionals, is all these guys are, like I said, Division I prospects. They all probably are faster, bigger, stronger than most of the guys they play against. Verified results do help us start to figure out who the fastest guys are of a fast group. So if you got all the running backs in the country, they're all breaking 80-yard runs on their highlight tape. Now we have some verified measurable behind that to say, okay, this guy is faster than the next guy.
And maybe the last one I want to, I'll kind of break down here, is the biggest one that loves to be talked about so much by college coaches, and that is star rankings don't matter. They just don't matter. And that's what every coach will lead off a signing day presser with. And then, as you and I both know, what do they then spend the next 15 minutes talking about? It's their star rankings. So,
yeah, I mean,
all right. So do you think star rankings matter? And I'm, yeah, obviously we're biased sources, but I also think, look at the national title game and who's 1 and 2. So what do you think? Do star rankings matter or don't they matter, Mr. Alan True?
So I think they matter to an extent. I also don't exactly know, you know, the definition in this case of mattering. Of course it doesn't, you know, if a kid is a 2-star, that doesn't mean that it's cemented that that guy won't ever make an impact, right? Or if a guy's an 80 and he's going to Minnesota, that doesn't mean that player can't have an impact or that guy can't outplay that ranking. But in a general sense, they do matter. And I think if you look also, you know, the best examples I can give you, of course, the national title game, Ohio State, Alabama, and then people will go, well, how hard is that? You guys just look at who's going to Ohio State and Alabama and you bump them up. Well, that's not really true either, because within that group, we have to decide which Alabama guy is the best. We're going to rank somebody in that class the highest guy. And I can tell you that it was this national staff went way out on a limb when they made Henry Ruggs the number one wide receiver in the country. I don't know that anybody thought that at the time. It sounded crazy, and he ends up being the first wide receiver picked. You also look at whenever a school who traditionally maybe doesn't get a 4 or a 5-star gets one of those guys and they become a impact player. You can't tell me that the stars on Peter Skoronski's name didn't matter when he started every game for Northwestern this year and was an All-American. Or you can't tell me that Purdue getting a 4-star like Rondale Moore didn't kind of change the face of their offense, or David Bell didn't help change the face of their offense when Jeff Brohm took over. Same thing with Rashad Bateman. I think it's noticeable when schools like that, who previous to those guys didn't get a 4 or 5-star guy, gets one of those guys and he becomes a star.
All right, so that's going to lead me into kind of the next portion here that we'll kind of get into. And that's kind of the 4 stars that Minnesota signed. And then, luckily for you, Alan, a lot of them here were in the Midwest, where I think we were higher than consensus on most, if not all, of the ones in the Midwest that Minnesota signed. But I also want to give you an opportunity here, because now we're going to get into the GI members asking you questions. And I know the one I get asked more than most is, some people don't know also about you. You are quite the comedian. I mean, you have opened, I believe, for Chappelle and then Chris D'Elio before he was canceled and not creepy. They want you to roast me. Now, you and I have spent time together in person over the years, and I'm curious to kind of hear how you would kind of come at me here.
So first of all, I didn't open for Chappelle. I had a chance to,
yep,
but I was out of town. So I don't
feels
want
bad
that to go on the record. You know, you guys normally, so I've also, by the way, won 4 Grand Rapids roast battles. So this is a little bit in my wheelhouse, but I didn't have as much opportunity to prepare for you as I would in some of those roast battles.
That's okay.
The first thing that I would say is that I'm glad that after, you know, everything that we talked about here, after 15 years in the industry of covering the NFL combine as a teenager, that I can finally be invited on the radio show of the 6th best 24/7 site in the Big Ten on the day that the producer is gone. I mean, what an honor. bestowed upon me here. I would also bring up that I don't know if people have ever seen your lady that you're hanging out with, but you've outkicked your coverage so far that Pro Kick Australia actually offered Ryan the chance to come train with them.
Oh, Alan.
There you go. That's a taste. I'll be more prepared next time.
And I believe you got something on iTunes if people like your comedic styles, right?
I do. I have an album on there. It's called A Cry for Help, which is because most of it is about parenting. And that's available on iTunes. Or if you have Apple Music, if you buy the album on iTunes, it's like buying a subscription for Ryan. If you listen to it on Apple Music, I think every time you listen to that, I get like half a penny.
Wow, that's awfully nice. That's awfully nice of Apple to throw some help to the small man.
Man, if I may divert for a minute, the album, and I'm patting myself on the back a little bit here, the album went to number one on iTunes for a week, and it was number one on Apple Music, and I'm thinking, like, I'm going to get this check, and we're going to, like, redo our deck and pay off the car.
That's such a dad move. Now that I'm a homeowner, like, there's nothing I would enjoy more than, like this week, you know what I get to do? I get to buy a brand new water heater and then install it. But it's like everything's so freaking expensive.
Yes, water heaters are a real racket, an incredible racket. I wish that for our wedding, everybody would go back and just like have chipped in towards our water heater. Like, that's what you need to get your friends when they get married. Everybody invited to the wedding needs to just decide, like, we're going to put money in like a water heater capsule for this couple for when it breaks like 2 years into their marriage.
Love
but it. So I'm thinking I'm gonna get, you know, I'm gonna whatever, like, I'm number one, right? So then the Spotify and Apple Music royalties number shows up and it's like a couple $100, and I was like, this has to be a mistake, there has to not be like whatever. And so then I verified it and they were like, oh, it's even less than what I thought, because then I have to like pay out the service and whatever. So I'm finally, as a kid who bootlegged everything off Napster when I was a kid, I finally am figuring out what Metallica was so pissed off about all those years.
What do you mean? You didn't download any viruses off LimeWire like the rest of us?
I started on Napster. That's how old I am. I started on Napster. Then I went into LimeWire and then Pirate Bay. And now I don't even know. I don't even know how you bootleg anything anymore. I think you'd steal it off YouTube.
Something like that. So... All right, let's get into some of the guys that Minnesota just signed that I believe you had us higher than consensus on. Let's start, I guess, with the signal caller of the class, what Minnesota staff has called the Greek Rifle. That is Ethan Kaliakmanis. You know, we have him, I believe. Is he still in the top 24/7? I think he is.
I think he dropped out the last time, but we're going to do something here that we haven't done before, which is we're going to keep the ranking open for states that are playing in the fall
or in the spring
in the spring.
Yeah.
Traditionally we would be locking these rankings at the end of January. We are keeping them open now, in order to, you know, leave room for some of the West Coast states and also the Illinois and North Carolina, I think, and states like that who are still playing. So he's got a chance to move back. It was just really hard to keep him above guys who had played and done well in the fall.
So when you think of Ethan Kaliakmanis, because I believe he is the highest rated quarterback Minnesota has signed since, I don't know if you were in the game yet, but if you remember Moses Alapate.
I do, yeah.
And yep. He's the highest rated since then. So when you look at Ethan's game, and obviously Tanner Morgan's days are going to be numbered here, with him being, I think, like a fifth-year redshirt junior. I don't know how many more years Tanner Morgan's going to be around. So when you look at Ethan, what stands out to you about his game?
So he's been in this four-star range for a long time, and he's a little bit of an intriguing story, I think, because he was up there. We saw him as a young kid, and he was throwing darts. He clearly had very natural arm talent. He was tall. We thought, you know, this guy's going to fill out into a big college quarterback. And he was already had played, I think, 2 years of varsity by the time he was a sophomore and getting around to some events. So he got up there early and has just maintained that spot, honestly, because we haven't seen a ton of him since then. He got hurt as a junior and then didn't play as a senior. So we're still trusting ourselves from that early evaluation. We're still trusting the upside. And then I had a chance to go see him throw in the fall. He was one guy I wanted to go, you know, see work out, just because I wanted to verify that things were progressing the way we thought he would. And, you know, he's bigger. He's delivering the ball with more velocity. And something that stood out is he's a really good athlete. And that was something that I don't know if we were able to see anything before that allowed us to know that. So I went and saw him work out with Marquise Irving, ran some routes, played some DB, you know, did some silly things out there just for the fun of it. But it did show what kind of an athlete he is. So I think he's going to be a really, really good college player. I think he's got great intangibles. The thing that I'm waiting to see is, you know, how much does essentially, if they don't play in the spring, how much does 2 years off, or basically like 1.75 years off, do for him developmentally? Does it take him a little bit longer to get acclimated than before? Maybe he's worked so hard during this time that it won't. But I think there's that question about him, just because we haven't seen him as much over the course of the last 2 years as most of the quarterbacks in our 4-star range.
And for those of you who don't remember, Ethan broke his collarbone, I think, 4 games into his junior year, so he missed the rest of it. And as Alan said, the state of Illinois did not play fall high school football. I think they're hoping to play in the spring, but I know there's still some things going on over there. Another Illinois kid who you just mentioned is a 4-star running back. I think someone we've also got higher than consensus. I know he's a top 250 kid overall, and that's Bucky Irving. Someone that I think has been in that range for some time, someone that you've had a chance to see live. So Mo Ibrahim was just the running back of the year in the Big Ten for Minnesota. I don't think he's expected back probably after 2021. So as folks want to look to the future, what stands out to you about Bucky?
Yeah, he's got probably one of the better highlight tapes of any skill guy in the Midwest. I mean, the guy makes some runs that are pretty incredible with his balance and his elusiveness, gets through and away from a lot of tackles that you wouldn't expect to see him, you know, kind of come out of the pile from. And so I really like that about him. Catches the ball extremely well, which if you go watch the workout clips that I posted of him and Ethan, that's pretty obvious there. He's a little bit of maybe a different style back than Minnesota's had. He's pretty different from Mo. I don't know he's going to be like a grinded out between the tackles power guy, but he's going to be a guy who can make people miss and hit the home run. And like I said, even though they didn't use him much as a receiver at his high school, is going to be somebody who you can motion out into the slot, throw the ball to out of the backfield, and just an ultra competitive kid. We, you know, like I think, I don't know if we said this as part of 24/7's philosophy, but we really like guys with multi-sport background, and it kind of got chuckled at before. And it still does from time to time of why we care if a guy's good at basketball. But I mean, if you look around at the NFL and guys who have been successful, it's very rare that they only played football in high school. And Bucky had an outstanding year on the basketball court. So I think that further showed what kind of athlete he is.
Did his recruitment surprise you at all? Because there was obviously some ambiguity at times with Bucky and with his recruitment with some different schools. So I mean, with some of the games, I guess, more largely that get played behind the scenes between these schools, does it really ever surprise you some of the things that are said, maybe in negative recruiting from these schools?
Yeah, you know, as far as what he looked at and where he ended up, I'm not super surprised. I kind of had him as a Iowa, Purdue, Minnesota kind of battle for a while. You know, he wasn't a kid who had an opportunity to get out and visit a lot of schools. And COVID, you know, I think he was waiting for official visits, and COVID obviously took that away from him. But prior to that, he wasn't a guy who was, you know, out doing on officials at games every week last fall. I don't know if he did any. And so I had him kind of pegged as somebody who would stick with the schools that he knew well and schools in the region as a result. I'm not that surprised that it was still contentious even after he committed to Minnesota. Those schools that I mentioned had him at the top of their board. I'm maybe a little bit surprised that some of it was as public as it got to be. but I'm not surprised that those schools didn't back off of him.
Well, and I guess with Bucky, another guy that you had a large part in and was also a 4-star running back last year was Kai Thomas. So when you look at Kai Thomas versus Bucky Irving, Minnesota has now signed back-to-back 4-star running backs. How do you think their games are a little bit different? And if you had to bet on one of those two guys emerging here, now again, I love to put you on the spot for things like this, which one do you feel more confident in?
Well, I think Kai is maybe a little bit more of your traditional, eye back, tail back. And Bucky's a guy, like I said, that you can move around and do some different things with. But they're both dynamic. I think they're both similar in that they're not 215-pound guys, but you watch their high school films, those guys aren't going down very easily. They're not first contact guys. They're not also not guys who allow defenders to hit them very squarely. So, you know, they're elusive in their own ways. With confidence, you know, especially in this year, it has to go towards Kai because he had a chance to play his senior year and then he's had a chance to already be at Minnesota. With Bucky, it's kind of the same deal with Ethan, where we did get to see a full year of him, but then we also didn't get to see what he would look like as a senior. I think there's no doubt that both guys have great pedigree. I think they can both be impact college players, but with Kai having the extra really 2 years of experience, having a senior year and a first year at Minnesota, I think he will probably, if I had to guess, he's going to make an impact quicker, I'd go with Kai.
Cameron James is a four-star from Illinois that I think we're the only service that has him as a four-star, and I know you've had a chance to see him live when he was a young player. I think he was even a tight end at the time. So when you looked across the Midwest offensive line pool, what stood out about Cameron James that you knew that you wanted to make sure he was a four-star?
Yeah, so like you said, tight end. It was actually a defensive end the first time that we saw him at a high school showcase. So he was already a big kid, but he was probably about 6'4", 6'5", at the time, and then got bigger. Had some basketball background to him. Then I saw him live, and I think that clip is available somewhere where he's lead blocking on a play, and he's like 25 yards downfield pancaking a guy. So when you're 6'8", 305 pounds, and can get that far downfield, can run the way he did, it wasn't difficult for me to say, this guy's got the upside to where we need to consider him as a four-star prospect. And then he was training at EFT with Jordan Diamond, who I actually covered as a recruit, and Jordan really helped start to shape Cam into a kid who was really raw because he hadn't played offensive tackle yet, into somebody who had started to kind of round into form. And we like offensive tackles who are usually a little bit more like Logan Purcell. We like leaner guys. You know, those are typically the guys who have been drafted highly, but I think that started to change recently. Because guys train so well now, and because there's things like IMG that can help a kid like Daniel Faalele, who is massive, still be able to move the way he needs to, you're seeing more ready-made offensive tackles. And that's what I noticed with Cam, is that at his size, he was still moving the way we like guys to move when they're 275, 280.
Speaking of guys that are already 275 pounds or 280 pounds, Devin Eastern comes to mind, where talk about a kid that dispels the rumors that once he commits somewhere, he can't move up. I don't remember what we initially put a rating on Devin Eastern as, because that was back in December of, I think, 2019 is when he committed to Minnesota. And now he's going to be enrolling on campus here in a few days. But I've seen Devin Eastern live. I've given my thoughts about him to the Gopher Illustrated members. But again, you get to see the larger pool. You have a larger scope and a much broader understanding of where Devin Eastern ranks, I guess, in the Midwest in terms of four stars. But I know from seeing him live, there aren't a lot of guys that look like him in Minnesota's D-line room, because he's actually 6'5", 270-something. But what do you love about Devin Eastern that you made him a four-star?
So I think we had as an 87 when we started. Okay. And then we got him to an 89.
Yep.
And that was as we went deeper into 22, and that was right before everything shut down. He's actually one of the ones that fans of other schools have most kind of criticized in the Minnesota class, to say, after that, you know, COVID shut things down, and all you guys did was watch a few clips of this kid working out and made him a four-star. He was made a four-star off of Twitter workout clips, but that's not true. He went from an 89 to a 90 because of those clips. And at the point at which we had evaluated his high school film, we said, this high school film is really good. This guy probably could be a 90. Now, without ever having seen him, we have no idea even what this guy is built like. We don't know what his body looks like. We don't know how he moves. We don't know what kind of twitch he has. We don't know, you know, some of those things. And that's something that, where a highlight clip of him working out can fill in some of those cracks for you. So that was just the final piece of the evaluation. And then I think he moved up further because you had mentioned going to see him in person and him having a really good game. against good competition. And we watch those clips. You know, you have a 200 and, you know, I think we do all these things. I am always reading NFL scouting reports still. I'm talking to people who I know who I trust in the scouting field. And sometimes the temptation is there to overthink things. With him, you got a 6'6", 280-pound kid who I saw on that Eden Prairie tape run down a play all the way to the opposite sideline. Let's not make this more difficult on ourselves than it has to be.
Right.
This guy's big and athletic.
Yeah, all right. Last guy I want to ask you about is, I think, a shocker, another guy that I think we're higher than consensus on, and that is Indiana's Austin Booker, someone that had a boatload of offers, someone that has, I think, as high of an upside as anyone in this class does. And, you know, we still, I think he's an 88 or an 89 for us. And I think we're still higher than consensus. So I know Austin Booker is someone that you and I have talked about extensively over the last few months. But if you had to give a scouting report of what Austin Booker is now and what he could be, how would you describe him?
Yeah, so I may even be a little bit higher than Austin than our actual ranking of him, but I think there's some question about, you know, exactly the production there. He's got a guy, a four-star guy, Caden Curry, in the next class who really swallows up a lot of plays, and I think keeps him from making some of those plays, but really smooth athlete, long. That area, that Indianapolis area, they play really good football. Austin's seen good competition. He's got the multi-sport thing. We like to play some basketball. Dad played college ball. Lots of pieces there to like. I think when you watch the film, you see a tall, long guy who, when he needs to dip and get low, get skinny, and be able to beat an offensive tackle with some finesse, he can do that. I think his upside's tremendous because he's already pretty technically sound, but I think there's still plenty of room there on that frame for him to grow, get bigger and stronger. And he seems to be very well coached and has taken to the techniques that he's been coached with as well. So he's kind of a guy who maybe, you know, you compare him to other defensive ends. I know we'll probably talk about Davon Townley. He's kind of like the other end of Davon Townley, who's this really raw guy with all this, you know, he's throwing down these thunderous dunks, but hasn't played as much football yet. Austin Booker's a little bit more of a higher floor, maybe not quite the ceiling.
All right, so you mentioned Davon Townley, and that kind of leads us into the final part here of the podcast for today, and that's the fan questions. And I know one of the questions I got is, where does Allen think that Davon Townley will go? Now, I'll state for the record, and from even talking with some people over there yesterday, I would be absolutely gobsmacked if Davon Townley ends up at Minnesota. I can potentially get into that at a later date, but when you look at the four-star from Minneapolis North here, I mean, you've had a pulse on this recruitment better than I think anybody. Where do you think Davon Townley ends up here in 3 weeks?
So I think you could almost throw like 15 schools that he's on his list and in a hat and pull them out. And probably I could probably make an argument that school could win out. You know,
sounds about right.
He doesn't really know yet. I mean, and I think if he knew, he would be committed and signed somewhere right now. So, but if I had to handicap it, I think like a Penn State or a Michigan State has some good things going for them. He's kept in contact with those staffs, particularly Penn State. He's kind of gone back and forth, I think, between wanting to play in the SEC versus the Big Ten. But I think Penn State has continued to recruit him hard into this second phase before National Signing Day. So if I had to say most likely, I'd probably say Penn State. But that's one where, you know, like I said, it can change quickly. And I could make an argument probably for several schools there.
All right. So RH13 wants to know, what is the craziest recruiting story either of you have covered? Now, I mean, I don't want to give specific names because I think protecting the kids and what they go through as their 16, 17-year-olds is important. Now, you can do whatever you want. But, I mean, some of the stories I've heard and seen versus some of the stories you've heard and seen, I mean, they're in totally different levels. So do you want me to start with this one, or do you want to go first?
Why don't you start, and I'll see what I have to do. Then it's like going second in overtime.
Yeah,
then I know what I got to score to beat you.
Yeah, I mean, I won't get too crazy, but I mean, I think early when I got into this, I think the first ever recruit I talked with was a four-star kid out of Illinois who ended up going to the SEC. And I know there was a lot of talk at the time, like, what in the world? How did this SEC school get this four-star? He was a wide receiver at the time, and I think he's still in the NFL. How did they get him? And then I think he went on social media, and he posted a picture of him with just an ungodly amount of money. And you're thinking, this kid is a teenager in Chicago. There's no way he should have that much money. And then the wheels start to turn like, oh, like the bag men, of course. I mean, the bag men at times can be real. I think a lot of people talk about them more than what they should, from what I've been told. But it just kind of, it was always something that I thought, like, that doesn't make sense. How did he end up there? Now every story is going to involve money. I don't want people to think that, but it's just, it was an eye-opening moment for me. Like, I didn't know, like, this actually happened. I was too naive. I didn't think that that was going to be the case, but there was a transaction behind the scenes there, Mr. True.
Yeah. So on that note, a parent did call me once and said, like, hey, I'm going to take the garbage out, and there's like a bag of money in our garbage can. What do I do
about it? Wait, what? I like how they called you, not like, so they just said, hey, there's a bag of money in our garbage. There's not even just, like, hey, from Tennessee boosters or somebody.
I'm assuming the bag was labeled, but I don't know. We didn't get that far. I was like, that has nothing to do with me. I'm going to try to forget you ever told me this. Unless someday I'm on a podcast and someone asks me what the craziest recruitment I've covered with, then maybe I'll remember it. But I don't want to hear about this otherwise.
I've also heard some tales. I mean, this isn't, it's so much tougher to get away with something like this in 21 than it is in like 2011. But I'm sure you heard the stories or know of stories back in the day. There was involving some adult establishments that maybe kids on official visits would go to. And it was just there's like no way that could fly in 2021. There's just no way.
No. Camera phones have really hurt that whole process. So the craziest recruitment that I probably covered that was public was Malik McDowell. His mother, you know, wasn't letting him sign with Michigan State. She was, you know, trying to withhold, I think, the letter of intent.
Because you need a guardian's or parent's signature on that, correct?
Yes. And so, but then you also don't really need a letter of intent, right? So there was this, like, he could just commit there and go there, and he's going to turn 18 at some point in the next few months, and then he could just go to Michigan State. So there was all that talk. There was some talk that she had really gotten into it with the staff on his visit. That one, you know, covering the twists and turns of that one, and also trying to kind of parse out what could be public and what couldn't. And you know, even by the end of just like people saying, hey, can you get an update on Malik McDowell? And it's like, oh, I don't want to call him or his mother anymore. They're probably real sick of me. That one stands out. My first big time recruitment that I ever covered was a kid named Ronald Johnson out of Michigan, who ended up going to USC. And there's a pretty famous story, which the Ron English, who was recruiting him from Michigan at the time, is now publicly admitted to, that he told Ron at a pizza place in Muskegon that he wasn't going to Michigan, and Ron flipped the table with all the drinks and food and stuff on it. Ron's, you know, I thought I would have to take that story to the grave. Since then, Ron's been pretty cool about publicly talking about how that all went down. But that was the first year, like, that was one of the first big recruitments that I covered, and I was kind of like, man, is it always going to be like this?
Well, I mean, speaking of that, I mean, I want to get off on this tangent, is how have you seen parents become, I mean, I think like every year, it's not even necessarily the kids anymore trying to get in touch with them. I guess this, before we get into that, how does your, as someone who's in this with me now, I mean, how does your better half deal with the fact that your phone is loaded with two different types of people, teenage boys and like 40-year-old men? Because there's no in between. There's also just like a lot of numbers in your phone that don't have like a name on them. And it's like, I can see why, like, if someone were to go through your phone and they don't trust you and they see like all these different random numbers from these random area codes. But like, my better half has just accepted, like, I have a incredibly strange, quote unquote, profession that all I do is text and DM teenage boys and then like their parents and then like college coaches. It's, I mean, it is, you know, when you say it out loud, it really doesn't sound great, does it?
You know, it's that's another, you know, people say that about our profession all the time, but I'm like, you know, these college coaches are messaging these kids more than we are. Let's not make it something
right.
That's not. But so a couple of stories. Number one, one of the first dates with my wife, a kid committed. I was explaining to her what I do for my job, and the kid committed. And she was like, she's like, you need to go tend to this. You can. And I was kind of thinking to myself, like, I don't know what I should do here. I really want to write this story. And she was like, you know what? I work like really close to here. You can just write it from my office. And she let me into her office, and I wrote a commitment story from it. And I think that was probably the moment where I was like, I'm probably going to end up with this person. So she's always understood that. There are definitely times where she's like, please do not take that call right now, especially when like both of our kids are
screaming,
get ready for bed, or yeah, like whatever it is. And I'm like, this is Coach so-and-so, I better go take this. You know, there's times where, very few though, but she will pull rank sometimes and go, you know, you can't take that right now. And yeah, we do have a lot of people on our phone. A couple of years ago, I bought a new car, and they were connecting my car to it, and they ported all of my contacts over. And the guy who was like the tech guy at the dealership followed recruiting, didn't realize who I was, and saw the names pop up on the screen. And he was like, is that who I think it is? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, what are you?
Who are you?
Yeah. So it's that was kind of funny. But yeah, I think balancing that, the part about our job that is awesome is like, we have flexibility, right? There's nothing breaking on a day. I can take my kid to school. I can hang out and do whatever. But then it's like middle of something, you know, Christmas Day, sometimes kids commit. So that's the gift and the curse.
How do you explain, and this is just, again, me going off on a tangent here, but like, how do you explain to like your neighbors what you do? Because I know like my parents, like they just call, they think I just run a blog. And it's just like, I guess, yes, to a degree, but also like my parents think like this, like a blog is like something that you started back in on your Napster days on Geosphere, where it's like no one, like, it's like a miracle to them that I was able to purchase a house with my better half. So like, how do you explain it? Because it's something I struggle with, is like, I just say like, hey, like I cover college football for CBS Sports. It's like the easiest thing to explain to somebody that has no idea about anything like we do. So what is your explanation?
Yeah. So yeah, my dad got really mad at me when I told him this is what I was going to do for a living. I was an honor student at the time. And I was like, I'm going to go do this, you know, write about football, high school football on the internet.
Hey, I'm through Calc 4. I was supposed to be an actuary. And then I was like, no, that'd be way too boring. I don't care what the money is. I'd be bored out of my mind. Yeah. My parents were thrilled when I went from actuarial science to sports management.
Oh, yeah. My junior and senior year in high school, I was taking, I took like 8 AP courses in order to never use them ever again.
Amen to that.
So my parents were not real happy at first. My neighbors, it's funny, I have neighbors who are huge fans of this stuff, who are subscribers, who didn't know that I live 2 doors down from them, who now, you know, ask me questions every time I wheel garbage out. I love taking the recycling out on Thursday night, having somebody yell, sure, like, is Harbaugh going to sign his extension? Like, I love that. There are other people who have no idea. There's people who like don't follow it, who think like, this guy's home all the time. He must like not be employed. His wife must make all of the money.
Oh, I get that all the time. You're always so home. Certainly am.
So then there's also people who like gravely misrepresent what I do. Like people will go, he's a recruiter for colleges. They're like, oh, can you make so-and-so go to this school? And say, no, I don't recruit anybody. Or people are like,
amen,
you know, he's a football scout for such and such school. I'm like, no, I don't scout for any school. So I kind of tell people that I'm like one part writer, one part scout, and I will gladly, you know, go into more details if it doesn't sound too boring for them.
Oh, yeah, it's something that I still don't know that I'll ever, because I'm the youngest in my neighborhood here. Like the people next to me are in their 70s. The people across the street from me, I mean, they just don't, like the guy next to me is a big Gopher fan. And it's just trying to explain to him, like, well, where, there's like, you know, are you in the newspaper? It's like, nope, Mike, not quite there yet. Not sure I'm ever going to get there. But all right, next question would be from Jank WI01. I don't know how much you want to divulge about this, but he wants to know, tell me about the Sam Jackson recruitment. Good luck.
I mean, there's not a ton there that I guess is behind the scenes.
Sure.
It's pretty public what all went down. I mean, he committed to Minnesota. I think he still, even when I just interviewed him about going to TCU, he still said positive things about Minnesota. I think he just really wanted the opportunity to play quarterback and really wanted a place that was going to fully give him the opportunity to do that. And where they're, you know, he sure. didn't say this, but obviously with Minnesota having Ethan,
yep.
that makes it different also. So then he commits to Purdue because Purdue said, and I do believe that they fully were on board with him playing quarterback because they haven't taken another quarterback in this 21 class. He was going to be their guy at quarterback. But then when TCU came around, he essentially was comparing the quarterbacks that were playing at Purdue and the quarterbacks that were playing at TCU and found himself to be more similar to what TCU was doing with their quarterbacks and thought, you know, that's probably a better place for me fit-wise with the offensive scheme. So there's not, like, even though for a kid who, like, committed to Minnesota twice and then Purdue and then TCU, maybe not as crazy as it would seem on the surface. There wasn't a lot of behind the scenes there other than a kid who was trying to find a place that would let him play the position he wanted to play.
All right. Lionheart of Gold wants to know, how would Allen evaluate Minnesota's ability to recruit in-state talent versus other Big Ten West state schools? So I think essentially he's asking, how do you think Minnesota's doing evaluating Minnesota kids versus Wisconsin, evaluating Wisconsin kids, Iowa with Iowa? If I've noticed anything here in kind of recent memory, it feels like Iowa and Wisconsin have a little bit more football talent the last few years here, but how would you evaluate?
So is he asking me to compare the actual football talent in Minnesota to those states or Minnesota's ability?
To recruit the in-state talent versus Wisconsin's ability to recruit their in-state talent versus Iowa's, because again, Minnesota fans really just know only how Minnesota does with their in-state guys, and they probably don't know how Iowa and Wisconsin necessarily do with their in-state talent.
Sure. So, I mean, I think in some ways the in-state school has a really – like they're never going to win, right? Like I live in Michigan. Michigan and Michigan State get – hammered every year for like, oh, you missed this guy. You know, how did this guy go to Central Michigan? You guys missed him. Or, you know, this kid leaves Detroit. And even last year, the Saints drafted a kid who went to Dayton, who's from the state of Michigan. And people were like, how did Michigan and Michigan State miss this guy? You know, so I always think, you know, I hear it in, when I go through St. Louis, they're like, oh, Missouri doesn't recruit any of our guys. And sometimes those complaints are valid. Like with Illinois, I thought it was very valid. They weren't recruiting the state of Illinois.
Sure.
And other times, I think that's just the nature of in-state recruiting, that high school coaches and parents, they're all going to expect the in-state school to just be all over any kid that can play a little bit of high school football in the state. And that's just not realistic. So I think Minnesota has done a good job of evaluating the talent. Anytime that I've read your camp reports, or I went up for a camp a couple years ago, there's always plenty of in-state kids there that they're evaluating. You know, PJ's made it a point to go to high school games, and so has the rest of the staff. They're in touch with the high school coaches. So I think they've done their job from that standpoint. You know, I know that people are going to point to a couple guys leaving the state to go elsewhere, but that happens everywhere. Iowa lost the top guy in the state this year to Nebraska. The top guy in Nebraska was Avante Dickerson.
Right.
And we don't know what's going to happen there yet, but you know, everybody comes into everybody else's state now. That's the deal with it being the way that, you know, we were talking about mailing around DVDs earlier. When you can watch huddle film now and message a kid on Twitter, it opens it up to people being able to recruit in different states. And I think when you see in the Big Ten West, they're all coming into each other's territories to where a lot more kids than usual left their home states on that side of the conference.
Well, it feels like in recent memory here, and again, you'd have a better idea than myself because of your Midwest perspective, but it feels like as every year passes, it's like more likely that the top in-state kids are probably going to leave the state. I mean, it happens in Minnesota. It's, as you mentioned, it's happening in other states. Do you feel like that's happening more prevalently now in 2020, 2021 than it was when you first started getting into this, you know, 15 years ago?
Yeah, I think kids are very willing to just explore
sure.
and go elsewhere. I think it's just, you know, when I first started even following recruiting and I wasn't even covering it, I mean, the local guys generally went to local schools. It was, you know, Michigan, Notre Dame, when I was starting to follow recruiting, Michigan and Notre Dame would occasionally go out and get guys from California and stuff like that. But you just didn't see, like, Minnesota's had kids in their class from Texas, from Georgia, from Florida. Like, you just didn't see that back in the day. And I think kids are much more open to branching out. And I think the ability to travel and see these schools has helped that.
All right. TK GoFan wants to know, what teams in the Big Ten does Allen feel are recruiting better than their expectations? And what teams does he believe in the Big Ten are recruiting worse than their expectations?
So I would say, like, Nebraska the last couple of years has finished in the top five, and then they finished number four. They've had the top class in the Big Ten West a couple of times. That's probably a little bit above their expectation. In this year, you know, Northwestern doesn't get the rankings love, but they've landed, like I said, with Peter Skoronski and guys like that, they've landed some guys I think they traditionally maybe wouldn't have gotten. Below expectation this year, I thought it was Purdue. I think they are, unless something changed recently, they were last in the conference. This is after the last couple of years where they had challenged to be a top five class, and I think even made it into the top five in the Big Ten one of those years. So you wouldn't think that they would make such a fall after being up there. So those are probably the schools that stand out to you. Everybody else, I think, is relatively where you thought they would be.
Which teams in the Big Ten West do you think are strongest at identifying and evaluating under the radar, quote unquote, recruits?
Well, traditionally, Iowa and Wisconsin have always done that. I mean, you look at their walk-on programs that have been very successful, how many guys from those schools got you know, drafted who were not highly ranked recruits or not highly recruited by other programs. I think in some ways, Minnesota has gotten to that point. When you look at the guys that have been drafted out of Minnesota, they're not necessarily the Carter Coughlins that we expect. Antoine Winfield Jr., Tyler Johnson was kind of a middle three-star prospect. So you see guys like that start to Antoine Winfield is almost, we bring him up in our rankings meetings all the time as like, is this one how could we have seen this coming? And I think we've looked at his pedigree, and I think he had some really good track results, did he not, in high school?
I think so.
Yeah, that we've looked at him a lot as a how can we not miss this guy next time around.
What team in the Big Ten not named Ohio State will be the next to make the college football playoff?
Ooh, that is,
if you say question. Michigan, I'm just turning off the podcast.
Oh man, I don't know. I'm gonna pass on that question. I don't have an answer. I don't. You know, it's right now with you. When you look at the schools that made it this year, it's hard to see Alabama and Clemson not making it again, and it's hard not to see Ohio State making it again based on how those schools have recruited. So that doesn't leave a whole lot of wiggle room there for anybody else. So that's a crystal ball that I do not possess.
What Big Ten campus is the most awe-inspiring that you've been on? Because I assume you've been on all, well, I don't know if you've been to Maryland or Rutgers, but of the, I guess, traditional Big Ten teams, you've probably been on every single campus at some point, right?
I've been close to all of them. Yeah. So Northwestern's facility is unlike anything that I've been to. That one is kind of like,
because it's right on Lake Michigan, right?
Right on Lake Michigan, and it's brand new, and there's a lot of like sports science stuff in there that when I walked in, I was kind of like, oh man, like even from the outside of the building with the beach there and their practice field there, you're kind of like, oh shoot, this is not, you know. And they kind of went from one end of the facility spectrum to the other. So if you had been to Northwestern prior to them building that and then seen it after they completed, you'd be like, oh man, that is quite the turnaround. You guys are going to maybe hate me for this one. I've always enjoyed Wisconsin's campus. I always enjoy the state of Wisconsin, period. I'm not a hunter like you, Burns, but I do enjoy the outdoors. There's good disc golf there. There's good hiking there, good fishing. I've always enjoyed Wisconsin. I've always enjoyed my Twin Cities experiences. And you can attest to this, that I'm not just saying this for this podcast, because you know that I have vacationed my family there.
Yes.
And you yourself questioned my decision on that, but we have always enjoyed our experiences when we've gone to the Twin Cities.
All right, I just got a couple more from you, and then I'll let you get back to being Mr. True, a.k.a. the first grade teacher. You know, people want you to summarize here from DVOC is, can you summarize how recruiting has progressed through Flex tenure here, and what improvements do you think need to continue to be made as Fleck continues to go here? Because, I mean, you've covered Minnesota recruiting from the Jerry Kill days to the Tracy Clays days to now here and PJ Fleck going into year five. So how have you seen things kind of progress here with PJ Fleck?
So it's very interesting because Jerry Kill's staff was having a lot of success, right? They were winning games, and they were doing, I think, the year that one of the years they won nine games, I think, like I researched it, and a good deal of the two deep Minnesota was their only Big Ten offer for those guys. And they were successful with that. And now Minnesota's recruiting is a lot different, where their entire class, you've got guys that they're beating out other Big Ten schools and SEC programs for. And so I think it actually kind of goes to show that you can be successful with this in more ways than one. But certainly Minnesota has recruited more nationally. There's it's more, the brand is more well known. PJ Fleck helps that, the whole row the boat thing and all that. Minnesota is more visible. I think if you go and ask the average high school recruit outside of the state of Minnesota or outside of the Midwest, hey, what do you know about Minnesota football? They're going to have more to say now than they would have before the staff's arrival. But I do think that they haven't, even though they've recruited guys who are more highly ranked and more highly recruited than before, they haven't fully taken that bait of not still trusting their evaluations. We talked about Cody Lindenberg. We talked about, Logan Purcell, guys like that, that they jumped out on top of and identified when those guys weren't on the radar. So I think that they've blended the two recruiting philosophies pretty well. Now, work to be done. I think they're recruiting well enough to compete for Big Ten West titles. I think that's just continue to push the success on the field, and recruiting will kind of fall in line behind that. As far as their recruiting approach and the players that they've gotten, I can't poke a ton of holes in that. I think they've done a really good job. This year, you had a few guys flip out of the class. You'd like to hang on to some of those guys, but I also recognize that this is a pretty odd recruiting cycle.
I think I only got about one or maybe two more here for you. And I know one question would be, what effect will Bielema's hire have on Minnesota's success recruiting the state of Illinois? Because the last two recruiting cycles, or even just under PJ Fleck, Minnesota has signed a lot of kids from the state of Illinois. I know a lot of kids that in our 24/7 Illinois rankings are in the top 25. Don't get me started on other recruiting rankings for the state of Illinois that are absolutely mind-boggling with some of the way that they have them ranked. But what kind of, do you think with Brett Bielema now at Illinois, from what you've heard from different people around there, do you think they're going to have more success, that being Illinois, and how do you think that'll impact Minnesota?
Yeah, I would compare it to like Missouri, where the previous staff was not really focusing on St. Louis or Missouri that hard, and then Eli Drinkwitz comes in and they get quite a few more of those kids. Now, if you want to come into Missouri and get a kid, you're going to have to beat Missouri on them. And I think that's what it's going to be with Illinois. I don't think they're going to, at least off the bat, be able to keep all of those guys at home, but they're going to make pitches towards those guys. They're going to get them on campus. They're going to recruit those guys hard to where you're going to have to, if you're going to have to go through Illinois in order to win some of those recruiting battles. That state has always produced enough talent and top end talent that it's going to always be hard for Illinois to bat a super high percentage, like in the top 10 in that state. I think they've missed out more on guys below that who have turned in to good players. Tevin Coleman going to Indiana. We mentioned Corey Davis. It's guys like that. I don't expect them to keep, Laquan Treadwell and guys like that at home. So I think Minnesota can still have plenty of success there. You've got plenty of ties on the staff to that state, including your head coach. Brian Callahan's done a really good job as area recruiter there. The guys who have come to Minnesota from Illinois have done well. Tyler Newbin starting this year, Steven Richardson previously, Ottman Bell. There's I could go on and on. So I don't.
Your guy, John Michael Schmitz, who I believe you had as the number one center in the Midwest, even when he was committed to Western.
That I did. And so, yeah, guys like that. So I don't think that all of that stuff goes away just because Illinois has a new coach who's going to emphasize the state more.
Well, I think that's all I got for you today. So if you want to go get some of your life back, I completely understand. But is there anything else you want the people to know before we kind of sign off here?
I don't think so. I actually have to hop on our rankings call. So we're going to go discuss some recruits now with the rest of the national team. But this was fun. I'm sure there'll be other questions that pop up. I'm on your board a lot. So if people have any questions for me, post them. And hopefully another 15 years won't go by before I'm invited back on this show again.
Oh, you're so sweet. So we want to thank Alan for joining, and we will talk to you guys soon.